This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hello and welcome to the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Oswald, and I hope you join me on my quest for knowledge to become a better public land hunter, angler, and forager. Stick with this and who knows, maybe we will learn something together.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Publicly Challenged Podcast, and I am sitting here with DeAndre Reed. And DeAndre, can you introduce yourself for everybody listening and just kind of give people a feel of who you are?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I am DeAndre Reed. I'm the host of the Dreaded Archer podcast. It's a podcast I started about 2 years ago to just talk to hunters from all over the country to see how they got into hunting. And it kind of spiraled into this whole thing now. And and I'm a late onset hunter. I didn't start hunting until I was, 27 years old. So since I've been doing it, I've been loving it, just love the outdoors and everything about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was it that drew you, we'll start first with what drew you to hunting or, finally like lured you in?
So when I was in college, I had a buddy named Rex, and he kind of took me duck hunting a couple times, but I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my thing. But what actually got me to dive into it is once I graduated college, I played football, and there was no NFL career for me after that. So I fell into this like deep depression. So drinking every night and going out to bars and just doing a bunch of stupid stuff. And I ended up moving to South Dakota for a job. And I would say that's about the first year. I would always drive by this archery shop, but I never didn't shoot archery, didn't know anybody that shot archery. And one day, the girl I was dating at the time was like, hey, let's go do something, leave the house. So for some reason, I just drove to the archery shop. Like, I've always wanted to go there. Why not go in and see what's going on, And walk in, the owner's there, and we just started talking, just chatting it up. He asked me, have I ever shot a bow? I was like, nope. So he gets a mission hammer, gets it all set up for me. And it's like, yeah, go out there in the range and shoot this. After like the third shot, I was hooked. I was like, ooh, I like this a lot. And I shot that bow from the time we got there until we got there about 12. We shot to about like 3-4 o'clock.
So you had your girl and, with you the whole time? Did she shoot too?
Nope. She was just there. She was just there to get me out the house because, like I said, I was in like a deep depression. She was like, gotta get you out the house to do something.
Yeah.
And she was just kind of sitting back just watching. It's like, wow, like I haven't seen him this happy in a long time. And gave the guy the bow back. His name was Kim. Gave him the bow back, and he goes, you want to buy one? And I was like, yeah, I do. And He's like, what you want? What you know? He showed me around, and I was like, you know what? You gave me that mission. I want to buy the mission. So he was like, well, that one ain't for sale, but I can get you one. So he gets me the mission, and I immediately get home and starts getting on YouTube, looking up how to, you know, increase accuracy. You know, what all you can do with a bow. I mean, just everything. Just jumped into it. The next day, I go back to the archery shop. I'm there before they even open, and go in and I shoot until they close. I'm there all day shooting. I order some lunch in, eating there. I mean, I was just there. And one of the members was like, hey dude, are you a hunter? I was like, you can hunt with a bow? And he was like, yeah. And I waited, and it's like just around that time our season, the application opened up. Boom, I get a tag. I go out, and that first season I didn't get anything, but just being out there was just amazing, and it just got me hooked.
It's crazy how once you make that conscious decision to become a participant in nature rather than just a casual observer, how much more connected you feel. You feel tapped into that primal something that's in our DNA that you didn't know existed, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's funny because I actually told my brother that because he saw pictures on Facebook. He's like, dude, you shooting a bow now? And I'm like, dude, I don't know what it is, but after like that second shot, I felt like I'm supposed to be doing this. Like it unlocked something.
Yeah.
And he thought it was a joke. He was like, nah, man, whatever. And that next summer, I ended up talking him into coming to South Dakota, and we went to one of the Total Archery Challenges. Now, my brother is one, he's hard-headed. I was like, hey, dude, you probably need to shoot, go get you a bow and start shooting before you come up and shoot. Well, he gets here, he doesn't have a bow. So I had bought another bow, so I had an extra one, so I let him use mine, got him set up. After about five or six shots in the backyard, he was like, I'm ready. And we go out to tack, and I think in my backyard it really didn't hit him. But then once we got on the course and he shot a couple of targets, he was like, ooh, I know what you're talking about, man. Like, I love this. And immediately the next he leaves, gets back home to Texas, and buys a bow.
That's awesome.
Like he jumps into it, and now he has his little girl shooting, and it's like, dude, like we.
That's great.
Now we're archery family now.
That's awesome. That's so cool. So how many arrows did he, your brother lose on you on the tack course?
He lost a dozen. He lost a dozen in the first six targets. So yeah, that was right off the rip. So. He went the rest of the course. No, he had one arrow that he had to basically let him borrow one of mine. So he basically had that one arrow until the end of the course. We leave there, go to the archery shop in town. He buys another two dozen, and then the second day he loses the first dozen. But then the third day he lost those.
You know, that's awesome.
He ended up coming home with one arrow. It's like, bro, you. I told you to practice. He's like, oh man, I'm Booby Miles, man. I could do anything. I was like,
that's
right.
Awesome. But that's so great that you know, I mean, you pulled him into the fold too, and now he's got his kid doing it and everything. That's amazing. So then the hunting bug happened, and like you said, you didn't get anything the first season. Where did it take you from there though? You know, I mean, more research. What were you doing?
As far as like, After the season, when I didn't get anything?
Well, yeah, after the season when you didn't get anything. I mean, did it drive to give you a motivator, or did it?
Oh, kinda, yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because see, so being new to hunting, I thought a lot of stuff was gimmicky. So, like, I didn't believe in, like, scent control. I'm like, there's no way they can smell me. Like, you know, I'm not worried about the wind, I'm not worried about scent. I really didn't have, like, good tree stand placement. I was just kind of. Found a straight tree, a tree that was straight enough. Boom, threw my stand up there. Really didn't have any game cameras out. Just went in blind. And so that off season, I started learning about food plots, doing research on game cameras. You know, learning about the wind, how to play the wind, and all that. That next season, I was ready to go.
So were you?
I was ready.
Were you on a lease or were you on public? What were you on when you were hunting?
So the girl that I was dating at the time, her dad had like 12,000 acres.
Oh, nice. Nice ranch.
Yeah. Yep. Nice ranch. And he was like, hey, I don't hunt anymore. Go out there and have fun. So I had like my I had cameras up. He went in and tilled up a couple spots for me where I put in food plots. I had ground blinds some places, tree stands in other places. I mean, I had the setup. I mean, I had we had beets in the ground. We had soybeans. We had strips of corn. I mean, it was a honey hole.
Yeah.
And that next season, I want to say it was like 3 days from opening day, and sitting in the blind and getting kind of bored and kind of dozed off. Woke up and there was a doe 15 yards in front of me. And, you know, you can't practice for that moment. And I get my bow and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go to full draw and she's going to run away. And I go to full draw. And she's still standing there. She don't even like know I'm there. And then I get all, you know, I'm sitting back and get her lined up. Got the pin right on the vitals. And I just let the arrow go, but I closed my eyes. I got scared.
Yeah.
And I look, she jumped up and she took off. And I just started shaking. And like, weirdly enough, I started crying. And I don't know why. And I was by myself. So I called my girlfriend. I was like, hey, I got a doe. So she comes out on the gator. And find the arrow, find a bunch of blood spots, but we never found a doe. Oh. And I was like, oh, man, this sucks. So I'm like, well, I know she's got to be dead because look at all this blood. And then we had some of those cutty back cameras. And like that night around, like, it was probably about midnight, get a picture. And she's at the feeder and I can see where the arrow went through her. And I was like, okay, she's alive. The next day, next morning, go back out, and I get in that the same ground blind, and sure enough, by 8 o'clock, she came walking back through there, and I got her that second time. So, and once I got my hands on her, then that's when the buck is like, I got a doe now. I gotta get that buck.
Yeah,
and it set the flame.
So let's go back to the whole. I think it's different when it happens to you as an adult versus. You know, a child or an adolescent, because you've had so much longer to process certain feelings that maybe you didn't feel or quite experience or even know yet as a teenager. Yeah. Or whatever. And then when you're as an adult, when that happens, you almost get overwhelmed with the emotion and the fact that you've completed this mission that you've set forth for yourself and you just, I've seen it happen so many times with people. In fact, you and I were talking a little bit earlier about a hog hunt, and we took one of my foraging friends that has never killed anything in his life, and he went and killed a hog. And we were talking to him, and he's like, I need a minute, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you know, and you give him that minute and let him process that emotion, and then everything's fine. But it's like, How was that for you? How did it, like, you know, you said it sounds kind of strange, but I don't think it's strange at all. I think it's even more common for an adult because they have a more developed frontal lobe and a sense of awareness and emotion that, you know, a teenager just doesn't have.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it was about completing a mission. And I think that's what I took it as, is like, you know, I'm starting this new thing. I don't know if I'm going to be successful at it. I do everything I possibly can. Reading, talking to people, watching TV shows. Like, I think I stopped watching sports for like a year and a half, 2 years. I was just stuck on Carbon TV, stuck on Sportsman Channel and all that. That's all I would watch.
That's awesome.
And that's it. That's like, that's all I would do. Like, I really jumped into it. And then to have that moment presented to me, and it was, I guess one reason I thought it was weird, because it was a doe. And as many times as I watched TV shows, I'd never seen anybody cry over, you know, harvesting a doe. And then when I finally get mine, it's just like all these emotions came. And a lot of it had to do with like what was going on in my life at the time. And like saying like, I'm glad I found this thing. Like, I feel like hunting saved me, because I was going down a really bad path.
Yeah.
And then to see the trophy at the end of it, which people wouldn't call a doe a trophy, but to me, the fact that I went out, harvested this animal with my bare hands and a bow, And I could just take this meat back and share it with my family and friends and tell stories about it, the hunt and what led up to it. I mean, that's a trophy. That's a lifetime trophy right there. It's better than anything I can get on the field.
Yeah.
It was all overwhelming, and it let it out. I don't know.
That's totally a trophy. No, it totally is. I mean, those memories are something that's never going to fade. You're always going to remember that moment. Like, I still remember my first buck that I ever took with a bow. And it'll never, in my mind, that is so emblazoned into my mind that I could still close my eyes right now as I talk to you, and I can envision it. And I'm sure, you know, till the day I die in the last breath, I'll be able to recall that unless I get dementia or something, you know.
It's like you can smell it. You remember all the smells, how the weather was that day. Like, it's like ingrained in your brain.
Yeah.
And it's wow.
It's awesome, though. That's so cool. So now, you know, you got the buck fever. You still with the same girl? You still got that?
No, unfortunately, we broke up.
Oh, no.
Last summer. So, yeah, that's.
You lost that's the honey hole.
Yeah. I did.
So now you on the public or what?
Yeah, I'm on public land now, and it did not treat me well this year at all.
Oh, boy. You know, there's a learning curve there. I could tell you about that.
Oh, it is. Like, and my biggest thing was just people walking. I didn't know people went on hikes during deer season. And that's what got me this year. Like, I had a really nice 8-point, maybe 30 yards coming my way, and he just freezes up. And I'm like, come on, dude, you got to just take a couple more steps, and I got a shot. And he's looking south, and he's not even paying attention to me. And I'm in my saddle, and I just kind of just lean and look. And here comes a couple with their dog walking down a trail.
Yeah.
Spooks them off, and it happened twice. So I was like,
it's not the animals. It's not the animals you got to figure out when you hunt public. It's people.
It's the people. Yeah. And I've already, like, from all my research, I knew if you hunt public land, you got to go deep in thick areas where other people won't go. And most of the spots that I were going to, you get 10 minutes from the car, and there's 5 or 6 tree stands. But the further I get, I'm seeing less and less stands, and I go deep, and I get deep in amongst them.
You know what's crazy is now everybody wants to go deep, though. And then, like, I've been sitting where I'm 200 and something yards, which isn't very common for me, but I've done it. And I'm sitting like 200 and something yards from the parking lot.
Yeah.
And I'll watch people come and go. And every once in a while, you'll see like a deer cross right across the parking lot. And it's like, no way.
Hey, they figure us out just like we figure them out.
That's right.
It is. But like now, like even like me and my buddy Rex, like we'll hop in a canoe.
That's water access, dude.
Yep.
We'll find places. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. And that's a game changer. Like he's took down some monsters. And people is in places where people say, oh, there aren't any big deer, you know, in this area. And he's like, watch me go get one. And he'll hop in his canoe and he'll go down the river or a little slough. And so, you know, he's coming back, you know, 4 or 5 hours later, he got something in the boat.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's my favorite way is to access with the canoe. And you can get in all the kind of little backwater tributaries and sloughs and all kinds of stuff that normally, you know, you wouldn't access with the boat, and you're not going to quite get with waders depending on the weather. And then not to mention, you know, you can you put in a certain spot, and then you can access from a different spot and really play the wind with that and be able to slip in on them. And I found the great success in that for sure.
And the tree saddle definitely changed the game. Like when I added that to my arsenal, now I'm like super mobile.
Yeah, and absolutely. Yeah. What are you running?
I'm running the Cruiser XR.
Okay, okay. I'm a huge fan of the Michigan boys. They got the Tuabor saddle, and they're coming out with a new one, but I still like the OG one that they had that's super lightweight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but no, it's definitely changed the way I hunt. Not only that, but to me it's more comfortable. I'm able to sit all day in a saddle because I get that support and that lower back support that you don't get when you're sitting or leaning up against a tree. That, man, it helps for sure.
Yeah, see, I've heard people say, like, oh, I sleep in mine. I can just relax. And I'm like, I can't sleep in it.
But then, like, one day,
I did. One time I did. I just laid up and went to sleep.
Well, you need one of them. Have you seen those dryad saddles that, or the dray or whatever it is? Dryad dray, I think. Mm-hmm. It's like a, it's almost like a rock climbing harness built into, so like that's your saddle part. And then it's got a piece of fabric that goes over it. And then it's got a whole bunch of extra fabric, like almost like a hammock. And then
you can pull it over you too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw, these people, they had an exhibit at the Iowa Deer Classic. And I didn't stop and look at it because I was like, I don't think I want to fool around with that. And I just kept walking. But yeah. That it was because I thought, like, dang, that's a lot of fabric.
I could see you sleeping in one of them. You know what I mean? But, like, other than that, I just get too excited, man. Like, I get amped up. Even if I'm tired, I'm just going to be tired the whole time because I'm still, like, just constantly looking around, scanning.
Yep.
I get amped up, especially when it's, like, first sit, man. I just feel so thankful and just that the grace of God's allowed me to be in that tree and be able to enjoy all that has been put in front of me. I almost get emotional and overwhelmed just thinking about that right now, you know, that I'm allowed to do that. And that opening day just, or my first sit, even if it's not opening day, just so thankful.
It's wild. I was sitting opening day this year. I'm sitting in the tree stand and I had a crazy summer. It was just life got turned upside down. But opening day, I'm sitting in the tree stand and I just prayed. I was like, hey God, thanks for letting me see another opening day. You know, like I know people that didn't make it to this deer season. And it'll it's appreciative to just be out there.
Yeah.
And I didn't see nothing that day, but I didn't get nothing. Saw a lot of doe and a lot of movement, but I just love being out there.
Yep.
And it was the first time in my saddle actually hunting, and I was just like, just kind of just swinging around. I was just glad to be out there, and then it was a little emotional because that was the first season without my girlfriend being with me. Normally she hunts with me, and I was like, guys, okay, this is something we did together, and she's not here no more, so it's like, you know, now it's just me now.
New chapter, yeah.
New chapter, for sure.
Yeah, man, that always it always gets me though, and you know, and like this year I put in for a bison tag, so I'm really hoping to do that and be able to do that with a bow. I think that'll be really cool. Always trying to find new adventures and new memories to make. What's kind of on your radar as far as, you know, like you said, mentioned deer hunting and stuff, but what's like the next chapter with you for bow hunting?
I want to bag an elk. Like actually this morning I applied for my Colorado elk tag. I forgot what unit we applied for, but I'm hoping that I draw. I got 3 years of preference points, so hopefully this will be the year that I draw.
Are you using like an odds calculator or anything like Go Hunt or any of that?
No, nothing like that. I haven't gotten it deep into that yet. I just like, you know.
So I'm just curious. Like, I mean, you got 3 preference points, but if you're applying for something like, you know, outside of Steamboat or something like that, or the Rabbit Ears Pass, or you might not be able to get, you know, a tag within like, you know, 1 year. Or if you apply to like unit, what is it, 63 or whatever's over there, over towards like the Mesa, some of them are like lifetime.
Oh, you know, I've seen some
lifetime
of those,
units.
Those
yeah.
Yeah. No, this unit, I want to say. It's about the San Juan Wilderness.
Oh,
area.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Southern Colorado.
Yeah. Kind of over by like Montrose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's 70 something, maybe 80 something, 78, 83, something like that.
71.
Okay. Yeah.
You're 71.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I went to Colorado 2 years ago.
That is some extreme country right there, dude.
Yes. And I was not ready for I wasn't ready for it at all. I didn't take my – I knew I had to be in shape, but I didn't take my training serious. So I literally drove from Sioux Falls down to Montrose, which is like 16 hours.
Yeah.
And then my buddy Rex, he drove from Arkansas, so he was already there. He had beat me there. And as soon as I get there, I'm not trying to set up camp, nothing. Hey, dude, let's throw our stuff on and go. And he was like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. Mind you, I'm running off like four energy drinks and a bunch of tobacco, and we get 10 minutes in, and my back starts locking up, my legs start cramping, and I'm like, bro, I'm gonna pass out. Yeah. He's like, dude, let's back out, go set up camp, get a good night's sleep, and we'll hit this thing in the morning. And I was like, all right, because I was like, if it's gonna be like this for the rest of the week, I'm not gonna make it.
It's crazy how much just that thinner air, what it does to you. I mean, that little bit of lack of oxygen that your lungs are not pulling in makes a huge difference. It's insane. Exactly.
it is, in which I knew better because I've played like a ton of football in Colorado, and so I know how the air is. And it's like I didn't think about it.
Yeah, you get a few days, you get acclimated though. It's pretty surprising what your body can do. Yeah, so definitely planning on bagging an elk. Did you ever get into elk on your first trip or no?
No, so what happened was that's the next day we started walking out, and no joke, we're not even 45 minutes in to our hunt, and my buddy, like, he stops, and this bull comes running in. We range him, he's at 80 yards, but we're like in a little aspen grove, and I mean, he's running right to us. So by the time we could get set up behind this bush, he'd already closed that gap, and he was like 30 yards from us, and he had a tree between me and him. So I go to full draw, and I'm waiting for him to just take one more step. And he just, like, he knows something up. Like, I heard a cow call. But I don't see a cow. So now he's real, you know, he's real alert. And I tell people this story. They say, if I was you, I would have took the shot. And I probably could have took the shot through the branches, but me being a new archer at that time and, you know, constantly hearing people say, if you don't have a clean ethical shot, don't take it. And I'm like, nah, I'm not going to botch this up. So I just sat there. The wind changed, hit the back of my neck, blew right to him, and he was going to the next county.
Yeah.
And we didn't see another elk that entire week.
You know what? At least you had an encounter though. My first elk hunting experience, we never even got into elk. Like, never even saw any, you know, had no idea what we were doing though. I mean, went into it with a whitetail mindset, had no idea, didn't do any research. You know, about the only thing we did is download some maps, and then still way underestimated and under exaggerated the terrain and how steep and elevation, and didn't take into consideration, you know, okay, yeah, this is 3 miles back, but it's you know, 6,000 foot elevation drop, and then you got to go back up it to get up to the other side. You know, none of that was taken into consideration. So
You got to do it though.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
That was our thing, because we had contemplated back and forth, like, should we go, should we wait? And I was like, dude, we've put it off the last two years. We've just put it off. Let's just go. Like, I've never been. He's only been once with his dad. I was like, dude, let's just go. And you know what? We might not get nothing, but we'll never know or never get a chance to get nothing if we don't go. So we went in with the mindset of, this is just a learning trip. We're going to learn how to call. We're going to learn what to do, what not to do, how to pack, how not to pack, all that stuff. And then me, I had to get over my fear of sleeping in the tent. So it was like, this is going to be just all learning. We just happened to be learning and happened to get a great encounter, which we still talk about that encounter to this day, even though we didn't even get it. It was like, dude, it happened so fast.
Yeah.
But now we know like how to approach it.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
Oh yeah. Cool. And I tell people all the time, especially guys that want to get into hunting, like, dude, you just got to go do it. Like, if you keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, you're never going to do anything. You just got to move. And that's kind of how I've been living my hunting life. Just go do it. Like, at this point.
Yeah. So what's after elk, you think? I mean, you live in South Dakota, not a huge pronghorn population, but I think you can actually hunt them as a resident, right?
Yep. Yep. I already got one of those. He's on my wall right here in front of me.
Nice. That's still a goal of mine to try and get some pronghorn. I still apply to Wyoming every once in a while, but I pretty much gave up on like Arizona and a bunch of other states that, I mean, just, it's almost unrealistic to try and keep applying, and, you know, you could be 18 years before you draw a tag to get one, you know. It's like, is the investment really worth it? So, I focused a lot of energy now on like, a more realistic elk hunt, which would be Kentucky, if I did draw the tag, you know. Plus, it's only like $10.
Kentucky got elk?
Oh, yeah. Dude, it's $10 to apply.
See, I'm learning about all this now. Like, I just found out that Pennsylvania had elk.
Pennsylvania has huge elk herd. So does Kentucky. I think Kentucky is the largest elk herd east of the Mississippi.
See, I didn't even know that. And then I found out last year Arkansas had elk.
It's not like a huge herd.
And it's a once in a lifetime tag if you draw. But I'm like, I've lived down there my entire life, and I've never heard of anybody.
I think it's northern. I think it's northern Arkansas, towards the Oklahoma border or something. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But I've never heard of anybody getting a tag or anybody ever going to hunt. Hell, I've been up there in that area. I've never even seen an elk.
That's because they're like ghosts. They're freaking ghosts walking through there. It's amazing. I was in Missouri one time at a hunting ranch, and I was sitting there in the back of the truck, and everybody else was chasing hogs, and they had a couple elk in there, you know? And I'm just sitting there, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see just a flash of, like real cool, like, brownish fur, and I'm like, what's that? And here's this elk just right along, right in front of me, and I'm like, no way. I mean, he was so graceful and quiet that if I had not seen him, I would have never heard him. That's crazy.
That's the crazy thing about elk. They're so big, but they don't make no noise coming through the woods at all. And it's like, how are you that big and you not hitting your antlers on stuff? They just move methodically.
Yeah, but it's crazy. But I mean, yeah. So Michigan's got an elk herd too that you can actually apply for a tag and get one. It's whatever, wherever it's at. It's somewhere I think in like northern Michigan, and they don't want them to like move any further south. So they surround that hunting zone, like load that with tags. And then once a quota is filled, you know, they shut it down. But the elk actually haven't migrated further south because of that hunting season.
Oh, dang. See, I didn't know that either. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
$10, like, dude. And you can apply. So the way it works is you can apply for an archery, rifle, cow, either sex, and a bull tag. And so, like, all five tags, $50.
Yep, I got to start applying for that. Might as well. Hey, yeah. if I can get an elk in every state in the country, it'd be great.
That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Get a state, what do they call it? Like a state slam or something instead
yeah,
of
like a state slam or something like that. Yeah, it'd be pretty dope.
Me and Clay last night we were doing a podcast and we were talking about it. And we're like, what do you call it if you want to try and get like every species of squirrel? Is it a squirrel slam or what? And we're going to do a squirrel slam.
And you can start it. I don't think there is one, but I know they do have one in Arkansas. Where they have like different species of squirrels, and I think the Game Fishing Park will give you like a little patch, so you can, like a patch on your jacket or something. Yeah,
that'd be cool though. You know,
it's like, a fun thing
to do. Like one where it's like every species of squirrel that's a tree dwelling squirrel, you know, within the United States, and they call it our Squirrel Slam. It'd be pretty cool.
How many species of squirrels are there in the country?
I don't know. We were talking about that last night, and I was like, I don't know. I know there's, like, pine squirrels, and then there's, like, red, gray, fox, you know, and stuff like that. And I was like, I don't know what else there is, though. And I'm pretty sure California's got some weird-looking ones, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't even know, but I think it'd be pretty cool.
when I bought this house, we had this tree in the back, and I had never seen a black squirrel before, and I had three of them just hanging out around the house. And I was like, you know, what kind of squirrel? Like, what is a black squirrel? And apparently they're fox squirrels. They just got a mutation.
Gray squirrels, yeah.
Yeah, gray squirrels, and they just got a mutation, and they're just jet black. And then we had a really bad, real bad winter, and I never saw them again. So hopefully they made it and found a new home or.
Yeah. So what's crazy about Clay and I were just talking about that too, though. That's the co-host of the show. And what's funny about it's a genetic mutation that has either adapted to survive and has found them to where they survive better being that color, and it becomes the dominant color phase in that area. Or in Clay's case, he says, he finds that the black squirrels are slightly smaller than your gray squirrels, so he always shoots the gray squirrels and leaves the black squirrels alone. And I'm like, well, now you're doing an injustice because you're unfairly selecting that genetic mutation. And eventually all you're going to see now is black squirrels. And he's like, yeah, I'm not really doing my part to, he goes, but if I'm going to shoot a squirrel, I want a big fat one, you know, I want to,
yeah.
And he goes, the gray squirrels are always bigger and fatter, but the other ones seem to survive more. And I'm like, yeah, you're actually doing your part to preserve that genetic mutation.
Right. Do you guys eat the squirrels when y'all
yeah.
eat them?
Oh yeah.
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 You see, most people don't. I'm like, dude, I love squirrel, man.
Yeah. Clay eats a lot more squirrel than I do. Squirrel hunting is probably, you know, like a secondary thing for me. It's a time filler. You know, if there's nothing else going on, I got a buddy that wants, we want to go walk through the woods together or something, we'll do squirrel hunting or stuff like that. But I actually like shooting squirrels with bows. Like getting like a recurve bow and shooting wood yeah. arrows with like a thumper tip on it and doing that. I have so much fun just chasing after squirrels and rabbits with the recurve bow.
See, I'm not that good with a recurve.
Yet. Neither am I, but that's the point. Like it makes right. it even more fun. You're already in a target rich environment. And if you miss, it's not that big of a deal. You know, it's not like
right.
you just missed 100 and something pounds of meat in your freezer. You missed like, you know, one meal.
That's it. So, a little squirrel sandwich.
Yeah. So one of the things you and I were kind of talking about, though, kind of transitioning from the whole hunting thing, but still within that realm, is you're kind of saying the future of archery shops and where is it going? Like, what are your thoughts on that, and where do you kind of see that?
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life.
So, here in South Dakota, we've had like a couple of legendary shops just close. Like, either you know they're getting older and they're looking to sell it, and no one had no buyers, so they end up they closed or just flat out running out of business. Period. And me and the guy that owns the archery shop that I go to, Archery Outfitters, me and Kim, we were sitting and talking, you know, last couple of weeks, and he thinks it's a thing of, you know, you got more people that are working on their bows at home. You know, everybody watching YouTube, going to YouTube University. Everybody thinks they can be a bow tech. Then you got, you know, shops that have, you know, crappy bow techs, like guys that think they know what they're doing and they don't. Like, I've been to several shops around the area here, and, you know, somebody might be, you know, shooting a little bit to the left, and instead of just adjusting the sight, they want to adjust the rest and all. It's like, no, you keep the rest square, man. Like, just keep it straight. Adjust the sight first, you know.
Or tell them to open their other eye.
Or exactly, yeah. You know, just like there's a whole lot of, you know, things you can do to fix that issue. But, you know, I don't know. And then I was talking to Mike Slinkert from Hex, and he was saying that he believes that there's going to come a time where we won't need pro shops. Like, you'll be able to order your bow directly from the manufacturer, and they'll have all your, you know, they'll have your draw length. They'll have your, you know, where do you want your peep sight and all that. And when they ship it to you, you'll have all your accessories, and you just have to put it on your bow, and boom, you're ready to go.
And that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to think.
And he believes that's where the market is going to go, because everybody's kind of on the, you know, the DIY. They want to do it themselves. And you cut out the pro shops, cut out the middleman.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I do personally like the direct-to-consumer model, you know, with a lot of things. One, cost savings, right, for the manufacturer yeah. and for the consumer. And if they could really do it to where there was some type of accurate measuring system to where, you know, you could do it at home, or you set your phone up and it measures your, just, you know, you put out your wingspan and it measures and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That'd be pretty cool. I'm not 100% against that, but at the same time, there's a part of me that hates seeing certain things dying, just like driving around and seeing shopping malls shuttered across the country And, yes. And, you know, knowing that an entire piece of my childhood is now obsolete. And, you know, my kids will never know that, you know. And instead, they're pushing a button on Amazon and ordering something. To me, that's just, it's sad. And it's sad to see that go. And knowing that you can go to the shop and listen to some old, you know, blowhard or just an old timer in general and listen to their story, whether it's true or good or not, you know, and being able to experience that versus, you know, but on the other hand, I see it, you know, there's a lot of opinionated or unwilling to change individuals that are, you know, technicians at a shop or an owner of a shop that tells you, you know, oh, you don't need an arrow over 310 grains because they're still stuck in that era, you know, or, you know, oh, well, you know, heavy arrows are the only way to go, you know, or whatever kind of mindset they're in.
Yeah,
and,
they're
and not being able to let you do your own research and figure out whatever you want and just kind of slap something on your bow for you. I mean, I've had that experience to where I ended up getting target panic because I took the technician's word for it. And he's like, yeah, that release is fine. And he just, you know, piled stuff on the counter, you know, rang it up. I swipe my credit card. I get home, start shooting the bow. And I'm like, why can't I shoot this bow? And I didn't even think that it was the release. And so I started punching the release and it turned into a whole problem where it was panic. And then I'm like, wait a minute, something's wrong. I got to reevaluate it here. So I found another old release that was a good one, started shooting that. But then same thing in my mind, I'm mentally just bam, 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 punching it. And I had to completely switch up my game. And I went to a Carter and a thumb release. And then I modified it and took the barrel off. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm in my basement blind bailing, shooting, you know, 100 shots a day just with my eyes closed just to practice form and technique 1 week before season opened. You know,
oh man,
but I did it and I was successful that year. So, I mean, I think I took three deer that year.
Oh, dang.
So,
but, hey, but, you know, you said something that really hit home. Like, you know, the shop that I go to, I love it to death, but sometimes customers will come in and they'll want something, you know, hey, do you carry, you know, this particular site? And I'm like, no. Well, can you get it for me? Why do you want that site? I've done my research on it. I want it, and I want to support, you know, the local archery shop, so I want to buy it from you. Well, I don't carry it, and I'm not bringing it in.
Yep.
Well, then that person leaves, and they're probably not going to come back because they had a bad experience. And now they're going to go to the big box stores, which is, you know, you're working against yourself because you don't want them to go to the big box store. You know, guys come in, and right now here in South Dakota, I don't know why it's just now getting here, but it is. But paper tuning is getting big here in South Dakota. Everybody wants the paper tune. The shop I go to, he don't believe in paper tuning. And if you come to him and you ask him how to paper tune, he'll laugh at you and tell you don't need to do it. And, you know, whether you believe it works or not, if a customer comes to you and they want you to paper tune, help, they want help on paper tuning their bow, help them out. You have the thing to paper tune it. You have it, the paper right over there.
You know what I find funny is most bows out of the box these days with the decent set of arrows, as long as you get that rest set up properly and then they have proper form, you really don't need to paper tune.
You don't.
But if you do it, you can find tiny little flaws and tweak those flaws, and then you could tune your arrows and go further, you know, and bare shaft tune and do all kinds of crazy things. But I mean, most people don't do that, but you get some guys that want to, and you definitely don't want to discourage those guys, because those guys especially are going to be the guys who end up buying a bow press and doing their stuff at home.
Exactly. And, you know, every bow shop around here, people tell you, oh, if you don't go there because of this, or don't go there because of this. And it's mainly because they're older guys, they're stuck in their ways, and they don't believe in some of the, you know, the new modern techniques. They don't even believe in some of the new, you know, modern equipment. It's like, you know, they don't.
Yeah.
And if they don't believe in it, they don't carry it in their shop, and they don't sell it to their customers. So a lot of them don't even have, like, some of the newer bows out. They won't keep them. They'll sell them, but they don't keep them in stock. Oh, if you want it, you got to have to order it, and you got to wait 2 or 3 weeks, or hell, maybe months. Well, most people want it now. I want to buy the bow now. I don't want to have to wait.
Right.
And so it's, you know, it's kind of stuck in the ways. And I think that's what's leading to these shops closing, because now people are just either buying them online or they're going to the big box stores. And
the one thing that I found, though, and you know, certain manufacturers will not send parts to an individual. They will only send parts to a pro shop, and then that pro has to install them, which I find kind of strange. You know, I mean, I get it. You don't want to burn the bridge with those pro shops because those are the ones that, you know, you built a relationship over those years, and they do know the product, or should know the product anyway. But I mean, there's a lot of guys that are really, really good technicians that working out of their home, you know, working on their own stuff or their buddy's stuff that, you know, I almost wish they would be able to get those parts for some of the stuff that they're doing, you know.
Oh, I think it's coming. I think the boat manufacturers will start hearing the whispers around the industry and they'll say, hey, let's give it a try. They'll come out with one boat that's they won't release into pro shops. It'll be a direct-to-consumer. And you'll be able to get the parts sent to you to work on. And then that'll be like the initial test. And if it's a success, then you'll see it spread industry-wide. And all it takes is for one of the big three to do it, and yeah, everybody else to follow.
True. That's true. You know who surprises me time and time again is Bear Archery.
Hey, Bear, people sleep on Bear. And let me tell you, I see a lot of Bear bows get sold every day at the shop. And it's and but people don't think like
their new the flagship bow of the Bear bow the Execute. I shot amazing. That not I guess well yeah I guess it would have been last year. I shot it last year and I was like, holy cow, This thing is nice. I mean, they really put it to it. Now, granted, that's not like, you know, like the Bear model or the Bear legacy or anything like that to where, you know, it's the working man's bow. That's your competitive bow, but that is a freaking nice bow.
Yep. It like Bear jumped into that bracket, and it's a good bow, you know. Yeah. And had I not bought a bow prior to that bow coming out, I'd have got the Execute.
Yeah, plus I just like holding a bear in my hand, you know, like the whole when I shot I shot traditional for a little while, and when I did, I had a bear, you know, recurve and everything, and I didn't always take that one out too much, but I got into this phase where my buddy got me collecting bows, and something about the nostalgia of like the old Bear Kodiaks and all that kind of stuff, the fiberglass back bows, I've got a collection of those that I keep on a bow hanger in my basement, and it's great to just look at them and pull them down every once in a while and string them up and draw them back and like shoot at the target in the basement. It's just something about those bows and knowing that, you know, Fred Bear had so much to do with getting archery seasons and doing different things and, you know, being the so-called like grandfather of, you know, the modern at the time archery, right? That just pretty neat to be able to carry on that history and that legacy for so long.
Oh yeah, hey, Fred Bear, the legend. And I know my ex-girlfriend, I geeked out one day because we were at a garage sale and there was like a book with Fred Bear on it. I'm like, oh, Fred Bear. And it's like an old magazine. It was a magazine actually. And I'm like, oh, I'm looking at it. And she's like, who is Fred Bear? And I'm like, you don't know Fred Bear. And I started just going through like, you know, his whole history. And she's like, nope, don't still know who it is. And I'm like,
oh man,
it's wild. Cause like to us, Fred Bear is a legend. I mean, he's like up there. But if you're not in the archery game, Fred Bear just another guy named Fred Bear.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's sad. It's sad that people don't know, and I wish they would. Yeah. Right? But have you ever watched Fred Bear videos, like the old school, like DVDs and stuff, all the collection of all of his different hunts and stuff?
No, I have not. I've seen videos that people put together, like highlights of Fred Bear on YouTube. Just a little compilation of just, you know, Fred Bear shooting his bow around. And I was like, oh, but I've never just watched any old hunt videos.
So back when Netflix was DVDs that got mailed to your house, you remember that?
Yeah.
You remember that? I'm that old. All right.
I'm that old.
I predate that. But anyway, those videos, you used to be able to get videos like that. So I ordered one time, I actually upped my subscription. Instead of getting the two, I get four DVDs at a time, you know? And so that way I could get the whole collection at once and watch it. And then it was so good, I ended up finding it. And my wife, she's my girlfriend at the time, ended up for like my birthday or Christmas. Cause I watched them so much. I never returned them. And she's like, are you going to get any other movies? And I'm like, no, I'm just watching these. You know, she's like, no, for real, like send those back and get something else. She ended up buying them for me, the whole collection of the Fred Bear DVDs so I could send them back to Netflix. But it was pretty cool, man. I still love watching them. I should get my kids watching them again. You know, I never got them into them.
Oh, you got to get them into it. They'll be hooked too.
they're getting there. I mean, you know, eventually. The one thing is I don't want to push them into something to where they don't want to do it. You know, I want them to naturally gravitate to it. I feel like that's the best approach rather than, you know, like I'm not saying I'm not going to like, hey, you want to do this, you know, to try and get them into it. But I'm never going to force them to be like, come on, you're going with me. You know, then they'll just resent it and never want to do it.
Yeah, that's how my dad was with me with baseball. Like he just like pushed me into it. Like I did not like it. I was a football guy, and he was like, "Nope, baseball." To the point where when I got old enough, when I got to high school, like, I'm not playing baseball. I'm done with it. Like I played little league. I did everything. I played everything you wanted me to do, travel ball and all that. I'm done with it. I don't want baseball anymore. I just hated it.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you was. So what led you to get into the whole podcasting thing?
Oh, that was my brother. So he was like, yo, you should like, first it was Instagram. He was like, you should start an Instagram to kind of like document your archery journey. And I was like, okay, cool, I'll do that. So start the Instagram, whatever. And then me and him had started a podcast like right as COVID started. And it was just a podcast about us. You know, we, ever since I left for college, we talk on the phone every morning at 8 o'clock. It's like clockwork. So we'd have these like in-depth conversations and he was like, dude, we should do a podcast. So we started the podcast during COVID. And then he was like, yo, you should do one with archery. And I'm like, nah, I got nothing to talk about. He was like, yeah, dude, you should, maybe you could talk about how you got into it. And, you know, at the time, I didn't know if a lot of like black people hunted, like was in archery. So it was like, well, I'm going to find other black archers around the country and, you know, talk to them and see what got them into it. And maybe we can get more, you know, African-Americans into archery. Well, found out it ain't a lot, but it's more than I thought. And so after I had talked to all the ones I could find, then it was like, well, you know what? How about I just talk to people about how they got into hunting in general and everybody can share their stories and just put it out there. And that's where it started. Just reaching out to people on Instagram and saying, hey, I'd love to talk to you about your journey and how you got started. And surprisingly, people was like, yeah, I'll come on and talk. And then it just snowballed and became a everyday thing.
Yeah, dude, I get it. I mean, my whole journey started with just a bow. Right. Me and my buddies, my dad bought me a hand-me-down bow. We got it sized up to me, tuned up, started shooting it with my buddy that had a bow. And man, we shot those things every freaking day, after school, before school, on the weekends. I mean, we got to the point where we were hanging like water bottle caps and like Snapple. Remember the Snapples? And like,
yeah,
we'd hang a Snapple cap from a wire, like a coat hanger. And then shoot the Snapple cap at like 30 yards, you know, and just stuff like that. And then we got to the point where we're purposely, I mean, it got expensive. My dad's like, you guys got to stop, because we were starting to shoot each other's arrows. Like we would purposely try and Robin Hood each other's arrows. And the thing was, is like the sight back then, they were the old, like little, they were the, like the metal pin. And it had like a piece of plastic, clear plastic on the tip, you know, and then like those would break off all the time. There was no guard around it or anything. And like we were constantly changing, just working on our stuff, changing out our pins all the time, readjusting them and just playing with it. And I remember I took my brother-in-law. It wasn't my brother-in-law at the time. You know, it was just girlfriend's brother, whatever. But we went and we went to archery shop and I was just taking headshots. And I was aiming at the eyes on purpose. I was telling him, I'm like, yeah, 30 yards, 40 yards in the eye. And he's like, no way. And then bam, right in the eye, just shoot like all the animals, all the 3D targets, shot them in the eye. And he's like, what? Get out of here. But the thing was, you do it enough that, you know, you're going to do it. And then so me and my buddy were like, yep, we're going deer hunting. You know, like we've done this enough. you know, we're going deer hunting. And that's how my journey started, you know. Well, actually, the deer hunting thing with the shooting the eyes was, like, later. But that was the whole thing. It was, like, we got so confident with those bows. We're, like, obviously we need to kill something now, you know. And then yeah. that's how it all started. And then I think I went, it might have been longer, like, 3 years or something without killing anything. Maybe four. I mean, I had no mentor other than just me and my buddy. No idea what was going on. And it's just, I mean, it took a long time, but a lot of mistakes later, and it all came together. And man, I'll never forget it. It was amazing.
Dude, man, see, like, I wish, like, looking back now, I wish, like, that my dad or I had somebody to introduce me to it earlier. Cause I'm like, man, I missed out on a lot, on like a lot of learning. And like, I know, like, my journey, like, started, like, you know, 5 years ago, but it really started when I was, like, little, like, watching my dad get up to go hunt, like, hunting.
Yeah.
It was, like, because, you know, when you're little, you really don't know, you don't really grasp time, but I knew, like, all right, whenever it's football season, that's when he hunts. That's the fall.
Yeah.
And I would be, and him and my mom weren't together, so, like, every other weekend, I'd be at his house. So, we go to football game Friday night, and I would try to stay up. Cause I knew if I go to sleep, when I wake up, he's going to be gone. So I got to stay up all night. And then I'd stay up and he'd get up and what you doing awake? I want to go hunting with you. Nah, you ain't ready for that yet. And I'm just like, come on. Like I want to go. Cause like, we didn't do much. Like we didn't really do anything together. It was normally it's, I come to his house. He go hunt. I'd sit at the house with my grandmother and he'd come back. And then he'd go to work, and then my mom picks me up. So I'm like, I want to do, I like, you're there out there all day. I want to go out with you.
Yeah.
And he's never would do it. And then he bought me a pair of hunting boots. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like,
it's on. Yeah.
It's on now. Yeah. You know, it's on. Like, I'm good. And then, like, the next hunt season, he didn't take me. I was like, why you give me the boots? Like, I'm wearing these boots like tennis shoes. I'm wearing them to school. Like, these are my, like, I was, I'm going to be a hunter.
Yeah.
Didn't take me. Then he told me I turned six, and he was like, I'm going to get you a BB gun. If you learn how to shoot the BB gun, then we'll upgrade to a 22 or something and then eventually get you a hunting rifle. So every day after school, I was coming home. I was shooting cans. I was like, I'm learning my hunter safety. I'm studying my hunter safety over homework and stuff. I'm like, this is what I got to do. Still didn't take me, and then like a couple years passed by and just like nothing. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stick to sports and I don't care about hunting anymore. And then fast forward, I moved to South Dakota and started hunting. And I think I was like 30. I'm 30 years old and I'm calling my dad. I'm like, hey dad, you want to come to South Dakota and hunt with me? And he's like, yeah. And dude, it was on like, and I was kind of grateful that he said, yeah, because like at the time, him and my brother, they had no relationship at all. My brother just did not talk to our dad. And I was like, hey, you want to come hunting? He's like, yeah. I'm like, cool. Dad coming, you ride with him. And he was already like, nah, I'm not doing that. He goes, how long the drive? I'm like, dude, it's 14 hours. He's like, I'm not riding 14 hours in a car with him. I'm not doing it. And I'm like, dude, do it for me, bro. Like, please. So now I'm sitting on pins and needles because they're driving from Texarkana to Sioux Falls, and they get here at midnight, and I'm thinking when they get out this car it's gonna be World War III. I'm about to break them up, and they get out the car laughing and just having a good time, and I'm like, all right, cool, like I haven't seen them like this in a long time, so I knew it's gonna be a good weekend. And then opening the next morning, we drive out to Winter that Friday, Saturday opening day, and we're just all, you know, go to our stand. Oh, me and my dad hunted together. My brother, he hunted with my girlfriend. And me and my dad, I mean, we got a nice buck. And that was a moment I'll never forget, because me and my dad both, we cried together. And I don't think it wasn't because of the deer. It was just like, that was the first time we had, one, been around each other since I graduated college. And two, like, we both got to share this, like, cool, like, memory.
Yeah.
And then my brother got his first deer, you know, sitting with my dad. And ever since then, their relationship, like, is been mended. They hang out all the time now. When I go back home, we all get together and hang out. And it's like, if I would have never found hunting, if I would have never went down this road, this journey, my family wouldn't be together. Like, me and my brother and my dad wouldn't talk. Well, me and my brother would talk, but we wouldn't talk to our dad. And yeah. It's hunting it, and it.
That's cool, man.
I'm glad I started that journey. I know that went down a long road. No, man. It was like that's where how the journey started.
That's the beauty of the outdoors, though. I mean,
it
can bring people together. It can heal. I mean, there's studies and everything done that shows the healing power of nature and how good it is for us, not only for our mental well-being, but for your soul. And that proves it right there. That's it, man.
Oh, it's wild. Like the year I went elk hunting with my buddy Rex in Colorado, we were sitting on the side of a mountain. It was probably 5:30. The sun ain't came up yet. And finally the sun comes up, and we're just looking out over this valley. And I started laughing. He goes, "What's funny?" I'm like, "Dude, somebody, God created this. He put everything in place here, and we're sitting here a million miles away from people, out of the middle of nowhere, and just look how beautiful it is." And he was like, he looked at me like, "What?" And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's like, it just came in my head, popped in my head. I wanted to share it with you. But it was a beautiful. It's like a scene out of a movie, like a nice picture. It's like, look at this. This is amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's I get it, man. I totally get it. I really do.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do. Because not only that, but so now I started my foraging journey, right? And I'm at the point to where, you know, I'm looking for certain things, and now I keep track of, when things shoot up in the spring and when certain mushrooms start popping up, and depending on soil temps or whatever, and you start noticing that, hey, this time this year this was happening, and this year it's much earlier, or it was really dry that year, and you start noticing things from the past and start kind of recollecting different patterns of things. And but not only that, I found myself looking for a certain type of mushroom and I couldn't find any, but then I found a totally different type that I didn't know grew in that area. And the next thing you know, I'm like, well, I'll check this one other spot. This tree always has some. And I get to that tree and it's there. And I'm like, no way, man. I didn't think I'd find any of these today. I looked everywhere else and couldn't find any. And I go to this one tree and this tree always provides, right? And in my head, I'm just starting to think I am grateful for this tree. And I put my hand on it, right? And I'm looking at that tree and I'm like, thank you. I thanked a tree. I'm in the woods. I'm with my hand on a tree, practically hugging the tree and saying thank you. But you reach a certain point in your life where, things reach a different perspective and you have a deeper understanding of things and knowing the relationship that mycelium has and shares. That tree not only has that mycelium that has mycorrhizal relationship with it, but it's transferring nutrients. It's talking to other trees through the freaking mushrooms, man. How awesome is that? And I'm able to be part of that and be part of that ecosystem and tapped in enough to where I know I'm going to go to that tree and somehow that tree is going to provide for me. That's so cool.
Dude, it's amazing. It's way better than going to a grocery store.
Absolutely. It's better than going and watching football on a Sunday too.
It is. I've tried hunting for morels, and I my eyes don't see them. I went with a buddy JP a couple years ago, and he's literally walking behind me. I'm walking, I'm not seeing nothing, but as I turn around, he's picking them up. I'm like, how are you seeing these things, man?
You just got to train your eyes for them. Yeah, don't look for the mushroom. Look for the shape. Look for something that's out of place that normally isn't there.
Yeah, I never found them.
Once you find them, that's I got my buddy's dad was telling me too. He's like, I've never found a morel. He goes, I've gone out mushroom hunting. I found all kinds of mushrooms, and he's like, and I can pick them out, but for some reason, I've never found a morel. And then so we went out, and I'm standing and I'm looking at morels, and he's walking around and he's like, yeah, I told you I wasn't gonna find it. And I'm like, kind of look by that stick, just move your foot a little bit, and then once he finds one, he's like, okay, all right. And I was like, well, don't stop there, you know, like look to the left and the right a little bit. And he starts finding them. And once he found them, he started finding them on his own. And I'm like, see, I told you you'd find some, you know?
Dude, I got to train my eyes because, like, I just now train my eyes to find sheds. I used to couldn't find sheds. Now I go out, I'll find four or five every time I go out.
That's awesome. But yeah.
But mushrooms, I got to do better.
Sometimes I'll look and like see like a black walnut or something and the kind of the shape, like just at a glance, and I'm like, oh, that's not a morel. Oh man. You know, and it tricks you. But it, like, they haven't been popping here yet. I went out looking once and I didn't see any, so hopefully soon.
Yeah, I know guys around here, they'll go out and they'll come back with a little tote bag. Like,
oh
little.
Yeah. Yeah, you can.
Like, man. It's like, never had that kind of look, but I do love just like living off the land. Like, that's what I want to do when I retire, just get a cabin somewhere and plop in the middle of the woods and just live off the land, hunt, fish, forage for mushrooms and all kind of stuff.
That's awesome. So
I want to try the teeth of the wolf or wolf of the teeth of the bear. It's kind of like a white
bear's tooth or, well, bear's tooth, Heresium. Yeah. Heresium mushroom. Yeah.
I want to try that.
Yeah. Pretty good. Actually, I found one down at the ranch you and I were talking about a little bit ago, before we jumped on. I found one there and actually did a little bit of a video. Clay filmed me climbing up a dead oak tree and, using my saddle with my lineman's rope and stuff and getting up there and taking it down. And I, cooked some up and then I made a tincture with the rest of it. So yeah, pretty good stuff. But, speaking of that. Turkey season is right around the corner. You got any plans for that or no?
Oh yeah, I'm hitting turkey woods hard this year because I got to get my revenge back on those cats. last year was rough. I went out several times and they were talking to me. I just couldn't get them to come in. And like the last day, I get out of my car to start, you know, going in, and I could swear I just hear them. I'm like, they laughing at me. They laughing like, oh, he back, y'all. No, yeah. We ain't going over there. But I had some good sits. Saw some nice toms. Just didn't get a chance to get a shot on them. And this year, I got, like last year, I literally sat in the ground blind, no decoys, nothing. This year, I got decoys. I've been out scouting. I got about four or five places that I've been looking around because our season starts in like a week or two, you know, 2 weeks. So I've been going out every afternoon looking. Scouting, got places marked on my map. Like, I'm got my decoys, how I'm gonna set them up and everything. So like this year, I'm ready for them. Like, I got my calls down. I've been practicing with the slate, and I got the mouth calls. I've been practicing, watching a ton of Michael Waddell videos on how to talk that turkey talk.
That's right.
You gotta smooth them. So this year, I'm ready. So like, if I don't get a turkey this year, it won't be from a lack of trying, I can tell you that.
Yeah, good for you, man. I've been annoying the heck out of my family, too. Out, my kids are telling me, Dad, come on, please, just be quiet, stop it. My wife's like, can you leave if you're going to do that? So, yeah, I've been driving people nuts with it. Just trying. I'm trying to get back to, like, where I could actually do a gobble with a mouth read. And then yeah. I'm really practicing trying to cut to where I could get in there and just start, you know, and get that cut to where it actually sounds good. Cause right now it doesn't. I'm pretty out of practice. I haven't drew a public land turkey tag in a while. So I'm excited this year. I drew one and it's the same unit, same spot that I drew when COVID shut me down and killed my permit and they closed the public land. So I'm thinking about filming it. I want to film it and then title it Redemption.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Dude, I love turkey hunting, and it's because it's so hard. It's not just sitting down and waiting for turkey to come in. You got to be doing some work. You got to be calling. You got to be listening. You got to be alert at all times. Like,
oh, I stalk on them. Like, I'll just walk through the woods calling until I get them to reply back, and then I'll slowly make my way towards them. I don't like sitting in a blind.
Is it easy? Is it easier that way?
I don't know. I like the whole running and gunning thing, though.
Yeah.
So I've never killed a turkey, like running and gunning like that during a spring turkey season. But I've stocked up and killed two in the fall with a bow during fall archery season. So pretty excited to get out there in the spring and chase them.
I can't wait to get out, because this is the first thing I'll be hunting this year, or yeah, for 2024. His first thing is turkey. So, because I didn't do any duck this year, so turkey, I'm ready to go.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm excited too. So kind of before we go, I'm just going to ask you the whole standard thing. It's been great talking to you. We could probably talk all night, but we don't need to run up the time forever. So before we go, DeAndre, where can people find you? Where can they find your podcast? All that good stuff.
All right. So, you can find me on Instagram at DA_DreadedArcher17. You can listen to my podcast at, carbontv.com, or you can download the Carbon TV mobile app and just type in Dreaded Archer. And you'll see my pretty face. But if you don't want to do that, you can also go to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Type in Dreaded Archer and you'll see the logo.
Awesome, man.
Oh, and if you want any Dreaded Archer merch, we got a new collection coming out in 2 weeks. You can go to dreadedarcher.com and get all your Dreaded Archer merch.
Very nice. It's been awesome talking to you, and I truly appreciate you coming on.
Oh, hey, thanks for the invite, man. I appreciate it. Been looking forward to it.
All right, man.
Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please subscribe on whatever platform it is you're listening to. Also, if you could leave a review, that would help us out. And you could check us out on Instagram or at publiclychallenged.com. And once again, thank you so much for listening to the show.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby. Right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know right here at Hawks Cay.
Oh, that's awesome.
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.